Our fifth case for this morning is United States against Rutledge. Ms. Scott?
May it please the Court, the District Court erred when it allowed the prosecutor to preemptorily challenge the only two African-American jurors in the voir dire. And for that reason, we request that Mr. Rutledge's case be reversed and remanded to the lower court. When Mr. Rutledge proceeded to trial, there was a voir dire that contained only two African-American jurors, Mr. Powell and Ms. Martin.
So let me just jump right to it, since this is a shorter argument. We need to analyze each one of them individually, of course. And looking at Mr. Powell, and bearing in mind the standard of review, I certainly could imagine that the trial court might have understood Mr. Powell's remarks as simply a little bit of a concern about whether he'd be taken seriously by the other jurors, and then he was reassured by the district court, I'm going to tell everybody, you know, that everyone's voice matters, more or less, and that any effort to remove him on some allegation that he was expressing an inclination in favor of the defendant was simply not based in the record. So, okay, that would have been a fine ruling. But stretching it, I can imagine that the district court might have thought, gee, you know, why is he fronting this? And it would certainly be a race-neutral reason not to allow a juror to sit who is predisposed in favor of a defendant. It doesn't matter what the race of the juror is or the race of the defendant. That's not something anybody wants. So on Mr. Powell, can you tell me why we have to reject this interpretation that I believe the district court came to?
Your Honor, I believe we have to reject the interpretation that the district court came to because the reason given by the prosecutor, which was that there was the belief that his expression, that he may not be respected in the process, somehow converts to him expressing a bias toward Mr. Rutledge, coupled with the fact that he and the other African-American juror in the voir dire were dismissed, shows a pattern of conduct.
But what he says, actually, he says, this is Mr. Powell speaking, the only thing that I can think of is that only being the other African-American in this courtroom would my views be overruled, seeing that they will think I'm taking his, meaning the defendant, I'm sure, point on something. So it's an African-American defendant. So that final phrase, I think the district court understands that the prosecutor is concerned that that might mean, again, I'm not sure I would hear it that way, but somebody could hear it as a certain predisposition in favor of the defendant. And if you can get that far, then I guess you would agree that he can be struck.
If you can get that far, Your Honor, I would agree. But I think that given the total context of the situation, Mr. Powell is a maintenance tech at an apartment complex in Indianapolis, Indiana. There's no suggestion that he is an educated person, and in fact, most persons who work in those type of positions would likely be uneducated. The fact that he lacks eloquence should not allow us to read into his statement that he meant that he would, in fact, side with Mr. Rutledge, but rather that he was expressing his concern about whether or not he would be respected
Don't
in the process.
Don't you think, though, the prosecutor could take logically the position that he did take, that it might be an expression, and all you have to do is show it might? It doesn't have to be absolute. Doesn't have to be a challenge for cause. It's less than a challenge for cause.
That is correct, Your Honor, but I don't think that we can logically conclude that Mr. Powell was making that assessment. The reason why is it is entirely conceivable that whenever you have a voir dire that has one or maybe two African-American jurors that will potentially be seated on a jury, they feel the exact same way. If I'm going to be in the midst the only jurors of 12, that am I going to be heard? Will my voice be heard? Will I be respected? Is it possible that they will overlook me if I decide that I agree with the defendant? And if we allow the prosecutor to dismiss, if we allow the prosecutor to dismiss jurors for that reason in this instance, why wouldn't that always be?
I'm not suggesting that it's an afterthought. I just said, couldn't you envision if the prosecutor was legitimately saying something that was concerned to him, that you could appreciate at some stage of the proceeding. You don't have to agree with it, just you understand. It's a legitimate statement from a guy who really believes it.
Your Honor, if in fact that were the position that Mr. Powell was taking, yes, I could conceive of that.
So let's turn to Ms. Martin, because there we have the trial court saying that she's distracted and she's not paying attention somehow, frustrated. She's agitated and frustrated. And jurors are struck for that reason of any race. If the juror is sitting there fidgeting in the courtroom, and obviously not, you could be concerned that this person isn't really going to pay attention to the trial. So what's your argument with respect to Ms. Martin?
Your Honor, when it comes to Ms. Martin, the record shows that Ms. Martin was struck, that trial counsel objected to Ms. Martin being struck, and the reaction from the prosecutor was she appeared to be agitated and frustrated.
Right.
Defense counsel stated, I did not make those same observations. And then the record is silent.
So your real argument with Ms. Martin is that there is no district court resolution of the credibility issue?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There is no district court resolution. The record is silent after the remarks of defense counsel with regard to Ms. Martin.
So if the judge had said something like, yes, you know, I was watching her and I think that the prosecutor's concern finds some basis in what went on, and so I consider it not only a race-neutral reason but also a credible reason, two different issues, of course.
If, in fact, the trial court had completed the analysis as required by Batson and its progeny, then I believe that we would not be making the same argument, Your Honor.
Ms. Scott, on that question having to do with Martin's demeanor, does it matter whether the judge saw that demeanor? I thought he needs to decide only the credibility of the prosecutors, the honesty of the prosecutor's reason.
Your Honor, in looking at what the judge is required to analyze, it appears that there are several factors that the judge should consider. One is the prosecutor's demeanor. One is the reasonableness of the explanation, which would in turn require a comment with regard to the observations.
The judge may not have seen it.
That is correct, Your Honor, but the record is silent as to whether or not the judge saw it.
I guess what I'm trying to get is, if we agree with you that a more explicit credibility finding was necessary, are we asking the judge to decide anything more than the honesty of the reason that the prosecutor gave?
Your Honor, I think it depends. If, in fact, the judge did make observations that he can recall, it requires a commentary on both the observations and the credibility of the prosecutor. Mm-hmm. In looking at McMath, it would appear that the judge should make some sort of he should provide commentary regarding his observations. However, if you look at the Thaler case, what that does, it doesn't change this court's outcome in McMath. Rather, it simply explains to us that Batson does not create a bright line rule with regard to the third prong. The difference between Thaler in this case is that there were two judges that were conducting the voir dire in that case. One judge made the observations, the other judge made the ruling.
Okay.
So why isn't it something, why isn't it the real question, the honesty? Once you've decided it's a race-neutral reason, obviously it can be, if it's plainly a racially based reason, that's different. But once you get to the credibility point, I can imagine that the judge's own observations might help the judge decide whether the prosecutor was being honest or not. If the judge observed that the person was paying rapt attention and, you know, was not at all agitated or frustrated, the judge might think that that was a reason not to believe the prosecutor. But isn't the final analysis is, though, whether the prosecutor, once you've gotten past the race-neutral point, is honestly offering a reason, or is the prosecutor doing something that's racially discriminatory?
That is correct. That is the analysis. The problem in this case is the record is silent. We have absolutely nothing to look at with that regard. And so, you know, it's for that reason that we believe that this case should be reversed and remanded to the lower court.
Okay. If you want to save just a bit. Ms. Pryor.
May it please the court. Doris Pryor, we have the United States of America. This question that is presented before the court comes down to the credibility determination of the prosecutor.
And where is that credibility determination for Ms. Martin? I can see how, I mean, the Powell case presents some different questions, but with Ms. Martin, I looked in this record and couldn't find a statement from the trial court resolving the credibility issue. Everybody agrees it's a race neutral, but Mr. Marsh says so it's not a credible racially neutral reason, and the court just says, so your concern is racial? No, it's can the person maybe he's even still on Powell, but anyway, where does the court resolve the credibility issue on Martin?
I believe the credibility issue is resolved in line with Thaler when the judge makes the ruling that the two reasons offered, specifically as to Martin, demeanor-based reasoning, was justified, and he rules on the credibility of the attorney when he finds that explanation as race-neutral.
But the ruling, unfortunately, here is just a bottom-line ruling. What if the district court was taking the position, which we've disapproved in a lot of things, that the fact that the race of the prosecutor and the race of the juror are the same automatically means there can be no discrimination. Now, in other words, packed in this word denied could be either legitimate reasons, accepting the explanation of agitated and frustrated, or illegitimate reasons.
The only reason offered as to Martin as to why she was being struck by the prosecutor was demeanor-based, based on the fact that she appeared agitated and frustrated to the prosecutor. And this court has held numerous times that body language is enough to be able to justify or show the neutrality once the judge assesses the attorney's credibility to uphold that finding.
Right. The problem, I guess my concern, Ms. Pryor, is it seems to me that Judge McKinney made findings at step two, race-neutral reasons. There was some debate about that with Powell, and ultimately he found that's a race-neutral reason that's offered. But I actually don't find for either Powell or Martin an explicit statement, in essence, I believe that the reason given is honest. And I don't know how we deal with that under McMath and Snyder.
I believe in Thaler, in the Supreme Court's explanation of Snyder, it goes on to hold in Thaler that the judge does not have to observe or recall the
but he has to resolve the question. He has to resolve whatever issues put in front of him.
The credibility issue.
Yes, right. Your Honor, and I believe that credibility question was answered when you determined that the reasons offered were race neutral. I believe
the judge's neutrality and credibility are two different issues.
I don't believe, Your Honor, that after Thaler, that as far as the credibility determination, I believe the judge made it by ordering or denying.
That's the McMath problem. I mean, one way of reading this is to say we assume the district judge knew the law, and when he denied the challenge, it implicitly found the reasons offered to be credible. But I have trouble reconciling that fairly natural reading with our decision in McMath and with the Supreme Court's decision in Snyder, which seemed to require an explicit statement about credibility.
as to the credibility.
Yes.
And the key point here is we can't conflate race neutral
At the risk of making that point a little personal, I upheld a few Batson challenges as a district court after I found race-neutral reasons were given. And I said, in effect, to counsel, I don't believe what you're telling me. I think it's a transparent ploy to get rid of minority jurors. It's a tough way to start a trial, as you might imagine, but that finding has to be made separately. At least as I read Snyder and McMath.
Your Honor, I believe that the credibility, once again, in the summary denial of the objections, I believe the credibility determination was made by the court.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that when you view the record in whole, you will see that the judge weighed the prosecutor's demeanor, reviewed my explanations that were offered for striking the two jurors, assessed my credibility, and evaluated my intent and determined that both rationales...
Were you the trial lawyer?
Yes, Your Honor. Had a basis in accepted trial strategy. And for that, my reasons were accepted by the trial judge after the colloquy between the trial judge, myself, and defense. And based on the record, there is no basis for reversal at this time. The government would argue that the prosecutor's motives are a question of fact to be determined by the trial judge. And the record, I believe, shows that the judge did conduct the third analysis necessary under Batson in making that credibility determination. Batson, at the third stage, the defense was required to show that despite my race-neutral reasons, my actions showed discriminatory purposes. And in order for the district court to have determined the neutrality and honesty of my reasons, the trial judge had to weigh the pervasiveness, the persuasiveness, the motive, and the credibility of my argument. After hearing arguments from both sides, fleshing out the prosecutor's motive, my motive, and observing my demeanor, the judge found my reasons to be credible. The record does not refute this. Credibility determination as to Martin and as to my challenge as to Mr. Powell was upheld by the district court. If there are no further questions, the government rests.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Scott?
Counsel for the government relies heavily upon assumptions. She asked that we assume that the judge thought or knew or examined many things, but those things are not contained in the record. She relies heavily upon Thaler for the premise that the judge was not required to make specific mention of his observations. However, a critical statement in Thaler is, thus, where the explanation for a peremptory challenge is based upon a prospective juror's demeanor, the judge should take into account any observations of the juror that the judge was able to make during the voir dire. That was not done, it is not in the record, and for that reason, we ask that Mr. Rutledge's conviction be reversed. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel, and we appreciate your work on behalf of your client. We will take the case under advisement, and the court will take a...